I'm Andrea Chilcote, executive coach, lifelong student of leadership, and author of What Leaders Need Now. Welcome to my leadership podcast. I've been an executive coach for over 25 years, and I've worked with hundreds of leaders from mid-level managers to CEOs and C-level executives. I've worked with people, leaders who are transitioning to new roles, leaders looking to advance, leaders who are looking to further their skills or overcome what we call a derailer that's blocking them from advancing. I've worked with leaders who are looking for deeper connections with their team and trying to build their team, and even leaders who are looking for someone to be a thinking partner, a sounding board, someone who is a confidential, objective confidant. And the whole field of executive coaching is relatively new. It's a relatively new profession. So why are we doing this podcast? To really talk about what it is and why we do it. The International Coaching Federation was founded in 1995, which is not that long ago. It was founded to give credence to the profession and provide training for executive coaches. And I was one of the early executive coaches, and I've seen that evolution. Still today, there are some who have misconceptions about the purpose of executive coaching. And as popular as it is, and it is even more popular all the time and very much supported by senior executives and organizations, the value is tangible, the value is seen. There's sometimes still a stigma in the mind of the person who's receiving the coaching. Sometimes people think or say, why was I chosen for coaching? Is there something wrong with me? So I've invited two of my clients here today who I'm hoping can help eliminate that stigma by sharing their experience and their perspective. Please join me in welcoming Virginia Nicewinder and David Clapp. I'm going to read their brief bios so you can get a sense of who they are. Virginia is Associate General Counsel at Cox Enterprises. She has over 20 years in legal experience in the areas of privacy, data security, compliance, product development, and risk. Prior to joining Cox, Virginia worked at a human capital company, private law firms, and the federal government. She received her Juris Doctorate from the University of Arizona and holds several certifications. While she loves the law, she is extremely focused and intentional on developing people, whether reporting to her directly or indirectly. Welcome, Virginia.
Hello, Andrea. Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad you're here. David Clapp is the managing partner of Carter Baldwin, which was named by Forbes as one of America's best executive search firms. In addition to leading the firm, Dave works with both public and private company clients on C-level executive search assignments. Dave entered the executive search business in 2010 after a successful 25-year business career with companies such as Xerox, Coca-Cola, and Thomson Reuters, as well as founding, leading, then selling a successful software business. Dave has a master's in management from the Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern and a BA in political science from Lawrence University. Welcome, Dave.
Thanks for having me, Andrea.
Glad you're here as well. So my first question to both of you, and I have to be fully transparent here with everyone. You are both my clients. I've been your coach. I don't know if either of you, it's funny, I don't know the answer to this question, if you've had other coaches. So I'd love you to bring that experience into this if you have. But my first question is, what made you consider getting an executive coach? Was there a specific purpose or event that made you decide to do that? And I'll go to you, Virginia, first.
So this is probably one of my favorite stories. I was at a turning point in my career. I was changing from being at a publicly traded company to a privately held company. I was pivoting my career. I was going from being an individual contributor to being a leader of a smaller team. So a lot of change was going on. And I had explored the possibility of getting an executive coach for the years leading up to that transition, but hadn't really done anything about it. So then I started at Cox, and within a couple of months, I realized that I needed help. And my manager at the time was a huge advocate of executive coaching, thought it was a great idea. And so I went to him and I said, look, if I'm going to be successful here, and I know you want me to be, I really need some help. I would like to explore getting an executive coach. And so he was on board with it from the very moment I said it, and it was fantastic. I think all of those changes in my life were really the reason behind why I thought it made sense. I wanted to succeed. I don't want to do it alone, and I knew I needed help, and so I asked for it.
The crux of what you said to me was the, look, if I'm going to be successful here, I need some help. And that takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of humility. And if everyone who came to me for coaching was already in that place, we could accomplish so much more quickly. And I commend you for that.
Thank you.
Dave, what about?
I was just going to add, and by doing that, I think I got probably more out of it in 6 months than we probably could have done in 3 years.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You were ready to go. Yeah.
It was.
Dave, what about you?
Yeah. You're the second executive coach that I have had. I had a coach that was assigned to me when I was a senior vice president, general manager with Thomson Reuters. And that was probably 18 years ago, something like that, 16 years ago. So I'd had some experience in that world. One of my very best friends is an executive coach. So I've been exposed to it by being a user, an executive coach that was kind of thrust on me. And then, having a dear friend do it. When you and I started working together, and I don't remember how long it's been. I've been here for about 14 years. So it's
not long after you came to Carter Baldwin.
And you did a Berkman assessment on me and talked to the then managing partner and the other principals at Carter Baldwin when I was considering joining 14 or so years ago. So we got exposed to each other then. And then I took over as managing partner, I don't know, 10 or 11 years ago, something like that. And a few years into that, I was feeling the need for some objective, third-party, safe, just counsel to kind of walk alongside me in my role, which has two facets. I mean, one is, I lead a search practice, and so I've got a client base that I serve and teams that I lead that flow from that body of responsibility. But I've also got responsibility for our firm. And the firm is changing a lot. It's we're going through a couple of pretty significant transitions, and those were kicked off 8 or 10 years ago. One of my mentors once said, feedback is the breakfast of champions. And I've found that to be true. And that one of my favorite quotes is, plans fail for lack of counsel. And so I knew that I needed just somebody that could walk alongside me as I played out both of those responsibilities, which I want to do well. And so that originated it. But my first coach was handed to me. It was so-so. This one has been great, but I raised my hand and said, I want the help. And I think
that's awesome.
The fact that you had some experience with our firm and with some of the other folks because of the Berkmans, that you've done on our partner team, along the way. So we had engaged transactionally, with you on some of the assessment stuff. So it was a natural thing, but I knew I needed the help.
So this is a good transition to what I wanted to ask both of you about, how do you select a coach and how do you look for, what do you look for? And I know at Cox, there's a very specific process, Virginia, as there are in a lot of organizations where you get to interview some people and then select which one you feel most comfortable with. Other organizations assign, like Dave, that happened with your first one, it sounds like. And then Dave, you selected me because you already had some rapport through the Berkman and you knew the firm trusted me. I knew a little bit about the organization. So, you know, Virginia, you did interview others. What were you looking for in a coach? What made you, we know why Dave selected me. What made you select me? And I'm not looking for what about me. I'm just looking at what were you looking for in a coach?
Sure. So before I even asked for a coach, I had gone to a friend of mine who I really highly admire and know she had worked with several different coaches. And I asked for her advice in terms of how do I select someone? What should I consider? You know, what are the things I should look for? And she gave me some really good tidbits. She said, as you're interviewing the person, you sort of know that you have a connection with them. And that the more you walk into the interviews, knowing what you're looking for, what type of advice and support you desire, and the feeling that you want to have with that person, the easier it becomes. And so I interviewed three different coaches, and I had great interviews with all of them, but they all approached it very differently. And I think, you know, it goes back to something that Dave had said earlier about wanting to work with someone he felt safe with. You know, I felt very safe with you in particular because I had walked into the engagement very intentionally. I knew exactly what I wanted to do, what I wanted to accomplish, where all my warts and thorns were. And so I was very transparent with everybody that I interviewed with. And it just really struck me the kindness you showed me, both the, we have a lot of work to do, but you're very kind about it. And so I think that that's really what I was looking for. I knew that I had some sharp edges I needed to round out, and I wasn't looking for someone to take a grinder to me. I was looking for someone who was going to take sort of the soft approach, but make me do the hard work.
Dave, you're nodding. Is there something you wanted to add to what she said?
Yeah, I think there's three things that are really important in this. Competent, safe, and direct. And for me, I want somebody that's going to be able to move the needle. I want somebody that I feel safe getting into the heavy lifting that's necessary. And I want somebody that's going to be direct. You know, you do these in bite-sized hour or what, you know, whatever increments of time, right? And so and a coach isn't there with you all the time, and so to move the needle and, you know, for it to be effective, you've got to get into the deep end of the pool pretty fast. And if you're camping out in the shallow end of the pool, you're just not going to move the needle. And I think there are lots of coaches that can provide business frameworks or, you know, kind of MBA grids. As an MBA, you know, I'm a big fan of it, but this is about like working on the person, right? I mean, it's, you know, I'm out on the field doing my job all the time, and then I come off to the sidelines. Well, that's what coaches do, right? I never thought about that, but you know, you come to the sidelines and they help you, and then you go back out on the field again. And in order to move the needle, competent, safe, direct.
I love that.
I think are really important in this. And if you don't feel that in the coach, it's not going to have the efficacy that you want. Mm-hmm. And I think those are things you feel as well as observe.
I love that. You both said that. You both talked about feeling. You both talked about safety. I love the deep end of the pool. It's hard to describe that to people. But it is a deep, it's not about giving you a framework or giving you a tool. And Virginia, you talked about having your needs laid out for those initial interviews. And I would say to anybody listening here, that is so, so important because you have to give the person who you're interviewing something to work with and respond to, because you can't know whether it's the right person unless you do that. And yes, as coaches, our job is to dig that up if you don't know what it is. But if you know what it is, it's not a game. So, if you know, lay it out there and see if the connection is there, and if that person has that competence, Dave, that you're talking about, to go with that, because there are different coaches who have different areas of expertise and different areas that they focus on. Yeah.
And even just different styles. I think the different styles becomes important too at some point. You know, Dave, you were saying earlier, you're working on the person, right? That's absolutely right. And you're putting your ego and your career in someone else's hands. And you need to feel like they're going to be both your cheerleader, but also the person who's going to give you that, you know, the directness, right? The feedback to say, hey, that probably didn't land very well. And have you considered X, Y, or Z? I mean, Andrea, I remember you and I having conversations where I would relay a conversation I would have with someone I was having a difficult time connecting with. And you were really direct with me to say, maybe you and I should role play that next time before you have the conversation. And while I would take a step back, it was the right thing to say to me to get me on the right course.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's good.
So, anything, Dave, you want to add to that?
I just said, no, that's good.
Yeah. So, you know, broad question, but what benefits did you gain from the coaching relationship? Dave, we've worked together a long time. Virginia, we've worked together a while, but less time than Dave. But what do you see as the benefits that you personally got out of it? Dave, you want to go first?
Sure. You know, the term that comes to mind would be becoming a better version of yourself. One area of that that I think has been the greatest for me, and there've been a bunch, but one area that's the greatest, I think, is this idea of equanimity, which is a term that I think predated you, but you brought it to me. And that's been a needle mover for me in working in how to respond in situations where equanimity is what's needed. You know, in the stress and pressure of being in the lead role in a company, you know, that's not always what I would lead with. And so that's been a huge one for me. One of the other areas is being fully present, which I think goes hand in hand with this idea of equanimity. But you know, you're thinking a lot and thinking fast in business contexts. You know, a lot of leadership is on the fly, right? And you're having to access it in the moment. You can prepare all you want, but it's when you're in the moment engaging, formal or informal settings, whatever it is. And to be fully present, I think it's a buzzword these days, but I think it's managing yourself so you're bringing all of your resources to bear in the scenario you're in so you can serve and be a good steward of your time. Because that's the way I view it. I'm there to serve. I'm there to produce results, but I'm there to serve the people that I'm leading. And if I don't have all of my resources and resourcefulness fully present in that moment, I'm not serving as well as I can. And so, you know, some of that ties back to the earlier comment, like it's not frameworks. Sometimes those are great, but it's how do I manage myself in a situation that can be very stressful so that I'm bringing equanimity to it and I've got all of my resources fully focused on the situation. And that's this idea of becoming a better version of yourself.
I love that.
I winged that. I hope that was okay.
That was beautiful. Virginia,
I love, and, And
would you think?
I was just going to say, I agree, Dave, with all that you've said. I think my journey was a little different in that, you know, all of that is where I ended up, but where I began was needing to reframe the way in which my mind thought about circumstances and situations, and really taking the moment to evaluate the circumstances and define it in a way that was attainable, rather than having this high expectation of myself and others that was unreasonable and beyond what should be expected. And so that the notion of reframing the circumstances to fit the need, fit the skill set, fit what I personally can bring to the situation and what everyone else can bring to the situation was really important. Andrea and I worked a lot on me being a perfectionist. And we would actually talk about my children and my oldest son being a perfectionist. And she would joke with me and say, I wonder where he gets that. And it was for me and really being able to take the moment to say, am I expecting too much? What's realistic? What should I be asking of myself and others? And doing that exercise regularly, because I still bend towards, I want to get it right. And that's actually not the way you should be thinking about it. It's the, what's the best way to do it to fit everybody's needs. And that reframing has been huge and very important.
Another thing, if I could, is we've spent a fair bit of time thinking through, is this a situation where I can reasonably initiate and sponsor change? Am I going to be able to affect the kind of change in this individual that I'm leading here or in this part of the organization? Is that worth it? Is the juice worth the squeeze in trying to affect that change? Or should I approach it more as a given and invest my time and energy in a different way that is going to more realistically create the outcome that I need for the enterprise? It's pretty valuable. It's really valuable to kind of become off the field and go, all right, let's talk about what we're trying to do here and crack the whole thing open. You know, like, is the change worth it? Are you really going to change that person or that organization? Maybe that's a fool's errand. Maybe we got the problem defined wrong. And that's a competency part. Like, you don't have to be an expert and run an executive search firm to be able to help the guy running the executive search firm think that stuff through. But that's another area where there's been a lot of value, is like deconstructing the probability of making the change I want and getting my goals in another, more realistically pointed in another direction.
I want to comment on that. I think I want to do two things. I want to broaden that to a conversation about change in an individual to influence in an organization. And I think, Virginia, you could probably relate to that, where it's, you know, how do I influence? Is the influence worth it? Is the influence worth it here? Or do I focus my energy on something else? And your comment about you have to be an expert in an executive search firm to help the guy running the executive search firm. And the interesting thing is, I, like most coaches, work across a lot of industries, and we do get to know our clients' businesses and our clients' companies for sure. And what we do is we listen. And the minute we stop listening, and none of us are perfect, I am not perfect, is when we get tripped up and don't help. And it's more about listening and helping you hear what you're saying and seeing and observing and mapping things out when it comes to the business situation, when it comes to, you know, my situation with this particular employee or group of employees or this group of colleagues. It's not that we know what the answer is with that person because they work in a search firm or because they work at Cox Enterprises or because they're attorneys. It's because we're listening and helping you reflect on what is true in that moment. Is that your experience of a coach? for the most part?
So I would say for me, definitely. You know, you and I, I do privacy law as a profession, and, you know, it's a very specialized area, and it's got a lot of complexity to it, and it's changing and evolving every day. And those weren't the conversations we were having. You know, I do agree with Dave in that sometimes it was reframing possibly, you know, the problem and whether, you know, changing the person or the organization was where you should put your energy. It was as much that as it was also, okay, so what toolkit do you have as an individual to bring to the table to solve the situation in a way that's going to be both authentic to you, but also not cause you more stress or anxiety and still feel good to the organization or the person, right? So it's that, you know, 360 view of the problem, you, the circumstances, as well as the solution that's possible, and really diving into that. And making sure that it's true to you. Cause, you know, if you go and tell me to go be nuanced and super sweet and smile all the time to someone, that's not how I behave. I'm a very direct person. I do it kindly, but I'm very direct. And so it's knowing that that is my personality and saying to me, okay, Virginia, you're direct. Got to be nice though. You know, your interactions with X, Y, and Z always result in this behavior. So how do you want to approach it this next time? So I think it's all of that.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think a good coach listens. I think a good coach listens. I think the evidence of that, when you're engaged with your coach, is you get a lot of, well, what I'm hearing you saying is X, where it's restating what they think I've said in different terms, which forces me to chew on it, to think about what I'm saying. And I think that's where positive change occurs, because then we're kind of together working more objectively on the problem. So I think a good coach listens. I think there are other scenarios that aren't nearly as effective. You know, that's more like a coin operated answer machine. And I'm not interested in that. And I don't think that moves the needle.
So talk to me about what you do with your experience in terms of others. So Dave, you have hired me then to coach people on your team. Mm-hmm. And Virginia, I know you have become a great coach of the teams that you're leading, the employees, and you've grown since I've known you, since I met you, you've grown in your size and scope of your leadership. And you're becoming a good coach on your own of your direct reports. So talk a little bit about that, how you encourage others to seek coaches and how you talk about the experience with others.
Yeah, so from...
You go.
I'll follow you.
That's
good. So as sort of a backstory, when I first started working with you, Andrea, if you remember, one of my two goals was to become a good leader, not just a good manager, a good leader. Because to me, you know, you can manage people all day, which I hadn't done at that time yet. But to be a good leader is so much more. And so when I hired my first employee, I asked her to play along. And she did an assessment with me, and she and I were pretty closely aligned. But there were areas of our relationship that we were going to need to work on. And one of the exercises you did with us was coming to what was basically a team agreement. You know, every month we were going to check in on very specific things that we needed to work on. And we did that for 6 months. And at the end of the 6 months, she and I had such a close bond with one another as employee and supervisee, where she trusted me and she was given that safety. And so when I brought in my next employee, we worked together to share that same mentality and the same view and vision we had of what it meant to be part of a team. And it was all based in the coaching I was getting. It was all grounded in the way in which you were helping me reframe things, present things in different ways based on the person, based on the circumstances, based on the situation. And so you extend that beyond to sort of my peers and my colleagues. I get asked all the time about coaching, and because there's this perception that if it gets foisted upon you, it's a bad thing. And what I say to folks is, you just don't know what you need to work on. You don't know, unless you're honest with yourself, you don't know where you can grow. And you'd be surprised how simply working with a coach and being honest with them about what you think others perceive to be your issues are, what you think your issues are, and then doing the deep work will get for you, and how quickly you'll make that change and become a stronger person, not just a stronger employee, but a stronger person and profession.
Awesome. Dave?
Yeah. Two comments on that. One is specifically in our business, I have had a number of folks in our organization that I have encouraged to work with you. And it's a dual benefit. The first benefit is it's pretty practical in our business, which our culture and our core values are very, very, very important to us. They're very unique to Carter Baldwin. And as a result of that, one of our strategies for continuing to grow the firm is to grow people from within, and not necessarily go hire from competitors to bring them in. We will do some of that, but we like to grow people from within for a host of reasons. And that means that we get people that haven't been in our business that come to work for us. And that is challenging. You know, it's not always a nice, warm, you know, shallow end of the pool to, you know, come out and get into the deep end. And there's a lot going on for a person, and it's stressful. As they're changing their career and the rhythm of their days and moving from leading a big organization to, there's a heavy individual contributor aspect to being an executive search. And so it's just really helpful for them to have somebody walk that journey with them who is competent and safe and direct. So that's great. And it helps us to not belabor a situation that isn't going to be enduring and long-term with somebody who decides this isn't what they want to do. But it also helps us to eliminate the likelihood of a false negative for somebody by giving them some help to process through this thing that's safe and competent and direct. The second thing that I think is a benefit of it for me is I think it makes my coach a better coach, because I think it's easy to game a coach. And I think that the more Andrea is exposed to, like, the people that I'm leading, and she's seeing it and experiencing it real time, she's better equipped to be competent and direct with me, because she's getting to walk around and sample, you know, the output of me. So that's just a cool collateral benefit of, you know, of the whole thing that has been really good for us.
I experienced that in some other organizations where senior executives really see that as a benefit, because I just know the teams so well and I know so many people in the organization. Yeah. I want to say something about, you said, you know, one of the benefits is that we don't belabor something that isn't going to work. And that is that hints of the fact that the coaching may lead to someone making a career decision or leaving or moving. And that is, you know, we started by saying coaching is not something to be afraid of, that, you know, somebody picks you to be coached because there's something wrong with you. It is not uncommon for someone to go through a coaching process because they're struggling with something, or because they want advancement, or they're trying to overcome something. And they, through this process, Dave, you called of becoming yourself. Is that what you, the word?
I think I said becoming a better version of yourself.
A better version of yourself, becoming a better version of themselves. Realize what they want in their life and their work and who they really are. And that job they're in is not the right job, and some other job over somewhere else is. And I can say, I can't think of any situations where that was bad news at the end of the day. It may be painful getting there, but it's not bad news at the end of the day. It doesn't mean somebody gets terminated and they're unhappy and, you know, their boss fires them at the end of the, that's not how coaching works. But to make a decision that this really thing that I thought I wanted wasn't the thing I thought I wanted, I want something different, sometimes is an outcome of coaching if that's where the person is struggling.
And I think the flip side of that is true as well. It's an opportunity to sharpen what you want, to sharpen the intended outcome, and to be honest with yourself about what it takes to get to that outcome, because it's not always easy.
Yes, it's not always easy. That's right.
We're implementing a business operating system at Carter Baldwin called EOS. And one of the concepts in it is for somebody to be effective in their role, they have to get it, want it, and have the capacity to do it. And it's a real simple framework. And if somebody doesn't want it, it's not going to work. But that's a harder conversation, like for a manager or a leader to have with somebody in their organization, because the default is, well, of course I want to be here. Of course I want this. And so I totally agree with you. I think, if this isn't right for somebody, because they don't want it, then isn't it kinder and better for everybody if we explore that together without conflict and stress and come to the best outcome answer for everybody, you know, where we're rooting each other on, you know, in different organizations now. And so I agree. We've had that happen. Andrea's coached, you know, somebody that ended up deciding they wanted to go do something else. And we still are great fans of each other. And it was a necessary ending that went really well.
Yeah.
For everybody.
So I got one last question, and then I'll open it up to anything that the two of you would like to share. You know, we know there's a distinction between a coach and a mentor. And mentors are important too. Do either of you have comments? I'll start with Virginia on the distinction and the importance of mentoring.
So I really had to chew on that question because there is a huge distinction in it, and it goes back to a feeling rather than words, but I was able to put words into it. A mentor is really someone who gives you advice, makes recommendations, shares their experience with you with the hope that you might be able to take from their experience something that will aid you in your progress. Whereas a coach is someone who is really giving you, and going back to Dave's analogy, like giving you the play on the field, right? Saying, consider doing this, and here's why, based on who you are, how you behave, how you show up, what you shared with me, what your goals are. This is what you should consider and make it your own. And I think that distinction between the two is really important, because I think there's this idea that, well, if I just have the right mentors, I'll be able to succeed. That's part of the story, right? Sure, your mentor should be not just people you trust and who will advocate for you and give you guidance and advice, and be the champion and be the person who speaks your name in the room, but they can't and sometimes won't, because of the dynamics at your organization. If it's a mentor internally, they might not be able to have some of the direct conversations they need to have with you, or you can't have the direct conversations you want to have with them to get the feedback. Right. That is really helpful. And so to have that, you know, going back to what Dave and I have both been saying, you know, that safe space where you can, you know, go in and say, okay, this is what's going on. This is how I feel about it. This is my perception. These are literally the words that were said to me. What do you think? How should I adapt or adjust to this? and not feel judged by it or feel like you have to be protective of how you say it. That's really the big distinction between the two types of people in your life.
That's great. I love that. And I love that you say mentors are really essential and not sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
Dave, do you have something to add to that?
Yeah, I agree with the idea. I mean, I thought I heard you say that they've got some experiences that they bring to you in that. I don't know if there's a perfect can answer to this. And so, I wouldn't say I've got the definition of a mentor versus a coach, but to me, there is an experience, like a been there, done that, to a mentor that, that is very helpful. It's contextual, right? I also think that there is a almost like a subordination to the mentor, and I don't mean that in like a creepy way, but I mean like I honor that person's experience and that I don't have it and I need it or I want it or maybe feel like I need it to be successful, you know, in this. So I'll give you an example. I'm 59. My wife Marianne, we've been married for 33 years. I've got two 27-year-olds and two 22-year-olds. I'm trying to lead a firm through a pretty significant transition from our founders and the major shareholders through a next generation that we desire to come in and take this thing over. And we have a goal to be an infinite company. And I've got a practice that I hope I'll have for 10 or 15 years. But I know my 60s, I don't know, but I expect that I won't have the energy level that I had in my 50s, 40s, 30s, or 20s, you know, which were my working years. And I don't know how to move through kids that are becoming independent, a marriage that's entering a new season. In our 60s, I've got a grandson now, and I've never led an executive search firm through the kind of transition that we're doing. And me hopefully having a practice in my 70s, because you actually, the grayer your hair gets, you can become more relevant in this business. But the core for me is Marianne and I at the center of all of that. So I've got a 72-year-old guy that I've hired, who I've been in business with before, who knows me, who knows my family, he knows my wife, to formally mentor me through this season that I don't know what I don't know. And like, so the goal that he and I set, he said, "What's your goal for this?" And I said, I just want to not screw it up, you know, because there's all these different aspects to this. And he's a guy that has, he's done virtually all of these things. And I'm like, so we're going to meet twice a month and just doing this for several years. And I'm paying him to do it. And I don't think you have to pay mentors all the time. But, and the other thing is this guy loves me and is like, he wants this to work for me. And we've just put teeth in it with a financial arrangement. But he's got the experience in all of these areas. So I'm like, I can learn from this dude.
And that's so different than a coach, Dave, because he's sharing his experience. Yeah.
It's different, but it doesn't change the need for coaching. It's just different, right?
Yeah.
You know, one of my favorite quotes is, "By wisdom, a house is built." Well, I think wisdom is not IQ. I think it's knowledge and it's experience. So, you know, help me with that.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Well, what parting comments do you have as we wrap this up? This has been a tremendous conversation.
I think what I would say is, if somebody listening to this podcast is questioning whether or not to go find an executive coach, and you have a goal or even a faint outline of a goal, go and do it. You know, because as long as you know what you want to get out of it, you'll get something from it. It's worth every moment and every dollar that you spend on it. You know, Andrew, as you recall, you know, you and I only had a 6-month engagement formally through Cox, and then I continued on with you and continue on with you on an ad hoc basis. And I, you know, every time we meet, every time we talk, I feel so much richer and more able to deal with whatever is in front of me, because I have that safe space to get the real feedback that I need. And so I'd encourage folks to go in and go through that journey, because it's worth it.
Yeah. I totally totally agree with that. Competent, safe, direct is huge. Huge, 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 huge. Don't do it if you don't feel that, if you don't have confidence in competent, safe, and direct. And you're going to get what you put into it. If you keep stuff back and hide it, you're going to undermine that person's ability to be effective in the areas that you probably most need to move the needle. Okay. You've got to be willing to get real, or you kind of gut a lot of it.
Thank you both for that. And I can't thank you both enough for joining me here today. I hope this gives everyone additional insight into the profession, the benefits, the relationships of executive coaches. And to all of our viewers, if you have additional questions regarding this topic, please reach out to me on LinkedIn or through my website, morningstarventures.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please hit subscribe below so you'll be notified of the next episode of What Leaders Need Now. Thank you for joining us today, and best wishes on your career journey.